Before we begin today's show, I have some important news to share with you. Premier Insight's financial year ends on June the 30th, and it's vital we close a final funding gap of $94,000 by that date. The great news is generous friends of the ministry have offered a new $5,000 matching grant, which will double your gift today up to that amount. That's why I wanted to take just a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am very excited to be joined today by Dr. Crystal Hurd, an educator, poet and researcher from Virginia. She's contributed a chapter on Flora Lewis, C.S. Lewis's mum, in the book Women and C.S. Lewis. And she's written her own book, The Leadership of C.S. Lewis, 10 Traits to Encourage Change and Growth. We're going to be talking about Crystal's work on various aspects of C.S. Lewis's life, as well as sharing a paper that was presented on her behalf at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Crystal's paper there was How Paternal Literary Habits Influenced C.S. Lewis. And how did the Lewis family dynamics change after Flora's death? Because as you say, it was a catastrophic event for the whole family, wasn't it?
Yeah. Albert never recovered. He that was the love of his life. She even says in a letter, I know you've loved me since we were children. And they probably knew each other in Cork. The families knew each other in Cork before they both moved to Belfast. It's not explicitly stated, but she says, I know you love me since we were children, but you probably have this perspective of me, not the real me. Mm. She's like, I'm worried that if you marry me, you'll be disappointed because I'm not up to your idea of me. And it was absolutely not true. They had an incredibly happy marriage when they were together, loving and kind and beautiful. It was a beautiful marriage. Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I think it was hard on all of them. I think Warney was in school and out of school at that point, so he was pulled out. I mean, there's even a letter that we have in the papers where Warney's like, are you going to bring me home, or you know, since mom's sick or whatever, and Albert's like, well, just stay the course for now. And if it worsens, I'll pull you out. And he did. He did eventually have to pull him out. So they were all together. But I think, you know, Albert's usually indicted for being a bad dad for sending the boys off to school. And I think he thought at the time that if he buries himself in work, that will alleviate some of the grief. Mm. And he absolutely was completely wrong about that. And then he realized, I think, after the fact, I should have dealt with that better. And I should have dealt, you know, with their grief better. He just didn't know. He was not used to having, like, young, you know, he was used to being around a lot of guys chatting about politics all the time. And so he didn't really know how to, and Warney says this in other places, he didn't really know how to deal with little boys. Mm. Especially their emotional needs. He just thought, you know, he's got that old Victorian idea, like, just go into work and it'll, you know, bury it in duty, right? And it'll be fine. And I think they all realized that that was not the approach. Mm. I think that was the tough approach. Like, you can do this. You can just, you know, just soldier through it. And then they realized after the fact that that is a wound that's never going to heal.
Yeah. And how old were Warnie and Jack when his when their mum died?
Okay, so she actually passed in, like I said, on Albert's birthday, August 25th, in 1908. So Warnie was it 2 years or three? 2 years older?
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the time, C.S. Lewis was 9 going on 10, right? Because he was born in 1898. So, so he was 9 going on 10. Still very young. At that point, C.S. Lewis had not been away to school yet. He had always been with his mother. So even while Warren, and he talks about Warren being his best friend, I really do believe that they were, even though Warren had went away to school, C.S. Lewis was still there at the house with the mother. So he had quite a bit of time alone with Flora. So I felt like that wound was a little deeper for him because he hadn't been sent away to school yet, but he was shortly after her death.
And do we know if there are any specific instances where Lewis reflects on his mother's influence or perhaps her memory, I guess, either in his writings or his personal correspondence?
Well, I mentioned that he did say, and that this is somewhere in volume 3, I think, that he said there's a part of Mammy's Little Lost Boy about me, which is mentioned in the chapter on her. And I really do believe that Diggory's mother is a fictionalized version of Flora. I just felt like, of course it's her. You know, when I read it, being, like I said, I was in my 30s when I read it for the first time, we're coming up on 30. And it was interesting because as I was preparing for my dissertation and doing all the reading, my own mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. And she was going through all of that while I was prepping. So you can imagine as an adult reading that for the first time and your own mom having cancer and just being like, yes, I get it. You know, where's the apples at? Let me go. Like, I'll go get them. And she is, by the way, she's been cancer free for many years now. So thank God. And, you know, she's been healed. And so, you know, my story is a little different, you know, than Lewis's. But man, she was amazing. In the letters, she's incredibly self-deprecating. She's like, she even tells Albert at one point, she's a bad investment. Right. Yeah, she says, I don't know why you like me so much. She's like, I'm not your typical Victorian lady. I'm not, you know, a math person. You know, like she mentions many times that she does not feel that she's attractive at all. Which is interesting because when you read Till We Have Faces, right, and Oriole is sort of haunted by that, right? And she's always very self-deprecating. She says, I'm not your typical woman. I don't think I can cook well, you know, And what's interesting is, you know, they do have a couple people they hire, you know, in the house to raise the kids, but she was incredibly great at her domestic job as the mother. She was great. So all that she was concerned about never came to pass. Mm-mm. She was, but again, maybe that's part of the humility that C.S. Lewis saw and recognized later in life. But she was incredible. The wittiness, she's so funny. At one point, she's talking about her sister, who was one of the, you know, the good kids, right? The her sister, Aunt Lily. She talks about Aunt Lily some in volume 1. She was a very interesting character. I mean, she was pro birth control, and supposedly at one point went around with birth control pamphlets and put them in baby prams, which are baby carriages, giving them to mothers, right, about birth control. She was a wild woman, but but she was really smart. And, you know, early on, C.S. Lewis sends her, you know, like Dimer and some of his early works for her feedback. But she says she was married to a guy for a while, and then he ended up going to an asylum and dying in the asylum. And, you know, so Flora says in one letter to Albert, well, you know, I'm not very demonstrative or anything. You know, she's like, my sister, she doesn't even kiss her husband. But she's like, but if I were her, I wouldn't kiss him either. Yeah. So, I mean, she's super funny, witty, so smart, very self. I mean, just all these great qualities. And it's a shame that we only really know her by her death.
Mm-hmm.
Because her life was so full.
Yeah.
And so brilliant.
And you mentioned, obviously, the explicit references in the correspondence and then the obvious parallel with Diggory's mother. But do you think there are any more subtle ways that we see the influence of Flora in Lewis's work? Any characters or themes, perhaps, in some of Lewis's literature where you think, oh, that does actually remind me of Flora in some ways?
Mm. I think his overall treatment of women, mm-hmm. And that's students, folks like Dorothy Sayers, and you know some of the great female friendships he had. I feel like he valued, you know, intellectual women, and he was drawn to them. You know, we talk about Ruth Pitter, right? The poet Ruth Pitter, which, you know, it's been written some about their, you know, friendship. Don King has written some about it, and you know, he'd written her and said, I really love your poetry.
Mm.
You know, I really love how you write. And was a fan, really. Was fanboying a little bit over her work. And, you know, I think about all the, like, so many women that he wrote to in his correspondence. His female, one of his female students was talking about how he would stand when his female students would walk in for their tutoring sessions, and how he was actually very respectful to them. And so it seems to me that because he came into this world with an intelligent, balanced, matter-of-fact, common-sense kind of mother, that he was drawn to women with those same characteristics and was respectful, you know, of women too because of that. I really do believe that his mother was sort of like the model of the type of woman he was drawn to and you know, encouraged and, you know, worked with. I mean, I think he had this incredibly intelligent mother who didn't have a long time with him, but in that time made a huge impact into his creativity, his spirituality, and his intellect.
Mm.
And that's the model. That's the model he had for his relationships with women for the rest of his life. And I really do believe that he was so attracted to Joy Davenman because she was smart, you know, smart as a whip, you know?
Yeah.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
I just wanted to quickly remind you that Premier Insight has been offered a new $5,000 matching grant that will double your gift today up to that amount. And right now, that's an incredible blessing, as there is a final funding gap of $94,000 that must be closed before the end of our financial year on June the 30th. This show depends fully on the generosity of friends like you. So I'm asking you to please give your very best gift right now to close this gap, knowing your gift will be doubled. You can give now at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. You've definitely already touched on this, but how do you think the influence of his mother and Lewis's relationship with her, and presumably her death as well, impact his impression of women generally?
I do think that he, now I've always had people say, well, what about Mrs. Moore? Because there's a lot of debate about how Mrs. Moore was not an academic, not even with a long stretch of the imagination, you know, I mean, even Warney was just like, oh, this woman, she's terrible, you know, and it's interesting because the Moore situation is just so different, I think, than most, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like a hiccup and a very long, like, look at Lewis's relationships. Mrs. Moore was, and people have argued, and I think rightly, that he did feel a duty to Patty, you know, to Patty after Patty passed and the war, that he had to take care of his mother. But honestly, I think Lewis did a lot more than he should have in that department. And Maureen, if you've read All My Road Before Me, right, which was Lewis's diary, he does sort of talk about how living with a teenage girl was kind of hard. Mm. I mean, yeah, I work in a high school. I get it, you know. And I've always wondered, too, if that was the inspiration for the problem of Susan, right, which is sort of the longstanding issue. The nylons and the lipstick, right? That's what teenage girls were into back then. And he lived with one, right? So when people are like, oh, he hates women because he talked about nylons and lipstick. I was like, teenage girls in the 40s were, in 50s were probably really into nylons and lipstick. And so he's just... And he lived with a teenage girl, right? So he was probably taking that from the source, you know. She probably had friends over and they all, you know, giggled and, you know, all this stuff. Stuff that's super annoying to scholars, right? I'm sure. But Mrs. Moore, just to me, seems like an anomaly, really, in the history of, like, Lewis's continued relationships with women. But he still was respectful to her, even though they weren't intellectually in the same, you know, ballpark. But I feel like he was very kind to her. He visited her every day when she was, you know, about to pass. And Maureen, right? I love that story where she visits Lewis, right? And he's been in and out, and he's older, you know, and she's married, and he calls her by her title, right? And says it's Maureen, and he says, "Oh, it's the and calls her by her title that she got when she was married." And even though he was basically like a brother, a surrogate brother to her, he even uses the title, just addressing her later. So, you know, I think he Flora's family was a interesting bunch, so he's probably used to. He was probably used to having some nuts in the family tree or whatever. So there was probably, you know, I think he did exercise a lot of tolerance, you know, living with the Moors. But overall, I think he was very respectful of women. I've had people bring up this and that, especially since the book's been out a while. You know, they'll say, what about this? Mm-hmm. What about this? All of us have a bad day and scribble down something that maybe we don't feel 10 years down the road or when we've changed or altered, you know. I was thinking of that book, was it The Sword Between the Sexes, that came out many years ago about Lewis's evolving, I guess, relationships with women. But it does sound like to me that Mrs. Moore and Maureen were kind of weird people to live with. I mean, no offense, but, you know, I mean... one point, yeah, they had that doctor guy come in, and it was crazy. But he even says, you know, I learned about how to be hospitable from Mrs. Moore. So even he could look at and see something was glass half full, you know, with that. But I feel like she's an anomaly, that most of his relationships with women, even up until his last days, he was always, I think, really respectful.
Mm. And were there any other key women in Lewis's childhood?
We don't know much about the Lewis grandmother. So she passed earlier than Richard Lewis, which was Albert's father. And Richard actually came to live with them for a while at Little Lee. that had a big impact, I think, on Lewis as well, being in the same house with two patriarchs, you know. But yeah, I mean, Mary Hamilton, like I said, was very outspoken politically. Before, we actually have letters in the papers where, let me just say, Albert was a very young and aspiring politician. When he was very, like I said, he was very working class. He went to Lurgan College. That's where he met Kirkpatrick. But within a few months of being at Lurgan, he was, his father wrote him a letter, which we have, that says, I'm sorry, I can't afford for you to stay there anymore. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. I know you're doing well, but you're going to have to go get a job. I can't support you anymore. We have a lot of kids. You know, I don't make that much money. So Albert has to withdraw from Lurgan and then begin an apprenticeship with solicitors very soon. And when I talk about this, I always tell people this is probably why he financed three firsts for C.S. Lewis and never, you know, yeah, he complained about it, but he knew what it was like to not have the financial means to go to school because he had to abbreviate his own educational journey to go to work because his parents couldn't afford it. Albert goes up through the ranks. He's starting to speak on different political issues. He actually, at 18, he becomes 18, 19. He's apprenticing with solicitors. He's doing really well. He's speaking at the Belmont Literary Society, which is like a local literary society there. It works actually very much like the Socratic Club. Like you would give a speech and then people would give you feedback. Here's a young, you know, 18, 19-year-old Albert giving all these speeches. And then we have a letter from Mary Hamilton saying, you know what? I don't agree with you on this home rule stuff. We need to be independent, you know, and sends him pamphlets, right? in the letter. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine? This is like the 1880s. Here's a woman who's writing to an aspiring politician at the time who says, I disagree with you. Here's my evidence, right? And that will be his mother-in-law later.
They love a pamphlet in the Hamilton family, don't they?
They do. I know, right? The Hamiltons were all about those pamphlets, right? All about them. But yeah, she, I mean, the audacity, you know, but she didn't mind. And she was very outspoken. And again, here we have Lewis's grandmother being very outspoken, very anti-Victorian, you know, in the way that she was handling stuff. But she didn't mind. She was comfortable in what she felt and how she believed. So, yeah, these were the women that surrounded him. You know, he did have some nurses and some different folks, I think, too, that were really helpful and taught him a lot about, you know, the different people and different classes. There's actually a middle grade novel that's coming out by a Belfast author, Judith, quote on called Giant, which is about sort of C.S. Lewis growing up and befriending a working class boy. And they both love stories. It's a fictional book, but it's just sort of a great example of like this is the climate that he grew up in. But yeah, a lot of the women were educated, outspoken. They were not the quiet type at all. Not even close.
Crystal, just as we wrap this up, you obviously have done so much research into Flora's life and in Lewis's family. What do you think are some of the most interesting things you learn about Flora, and has it impacted the way that you understand Lewis at all?
Yes, absolutely. Like we've talked before, I had heard when I first started reading Lewis about all like Lewis doesn't like women and da 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 da, As I did my own research, I started to see comprehensively to sort of back up and look at his whole life, you know, and understand comprehensively what it was like to grow up where he did with the family, surrounded by the family he did, and sort of see it as a continuum and as he is an individual. I mean, yes, he's the giant, the author we love, right? But he was a guy. He was a person who grew up and had, you know, these circumstances around him and how he reacted and how he grew from those and developed from those things show the kind of person he was and who he would be, I think, hints at who he would be. So I think Flora, as a mother, like, what a wonderful role model. Mm. You know, this is a woman who courageously walked into classrooms where she was not welcome, studied subjects that were culturally not really supposed to be a woman's place, who took her sons out, and let me tell you, the letters are full of, I have a headache today, I mean, she was really suffering those last couple of years, really suffering. And she, you know, to the point where sometimes she'd have to take them to the shore and just go lay down. And let the nurse kind of take the boys. But she insisted that she go out as much as possible, despite even her own ailments. She wanted to be, and maybe she knew deep down, you know, that she wouldn't have as much time. And she was just the soothing force in that family. I mean, Lewis talks about her so well in Surprised by Joy. I mean, right on page one, right? They go for happiness as someone goes for a seat on the train, right, is what he says. And what a cool yin and yang, right, of experiences. But she taught him so much about love and sacrifice and all these things that he as an adult would exercise on a daily, you know. And I think he always missed her, always loved her. And that's why we see her reflections of her in Narnia. It wouldn't be Narnia to me without her. And, you know, I've had people ask me, even just recently, they say, like, you know, let's talk about Narnia. Which book do you want to do? And I'll say The Magician's Nephew. That's Flora's book. I mean, not officially, but, you know, because of my own experience with reading that book and knowing now what I know about Flora, that book is just another level. It's just, you know, it's just another level. It's great. And yeah, she was a marvelous human being. And I'm working on the book now, Bookish Clever People, on the family. And my goal is to reacquaint the world with the woman who helped make him who he was.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.